Henderson had come over early that morning to collect the professor, and as luck would have it, his car had broken down on the primitive road. This was unfortunate for Davis and Barton, who would have to walk to camp for lunch, since Professor Fowler was driving Henderson back in the jeep. They were quite prepared to put up with this if their wait was indeed coming to an end, as the others had more than half hinted. They had stood talking by the side of the jeep for some time before the two older scientists had driven away. It was a rather strained parting, for each side knew what the other was thinking. Finally, Barton, as usual, the most outspoken, remarked, "Well, Doc, if this is der Tag, I hope everything works properly. I'd like a photograph of a brontosaurus as a souvenir." This sort of banter had been thrown at Henderson so often that he now took it for granted. He smiled without much mirth and replied, "I don't promise anything. It may be the biggest flop ever." Davis moodily checked the tire pressure with the toe of his boot. It was a new set, he noticed, with an odd zigzag pattern he hadn't seen before. "Well, whatever happens, we hope you'll tell us. Otherwise, we're going to break in one night and find out just what you're up to." Henderson laughed. "You'll be a pair of geniuses if you can learn anything from our present lash-up. But if all goes well, we may be having a little celebration by nightfall." "What time do you expect to be back, Chief?" "Somewhere around 4. I don't want you to have to walk back for tea." "Okay, here's hoping." The machine disappeared in a cloud of dust, leaving two very thoughtful geologists standing by the roadside. Then Barton shrugged his shoulders. "The harder we work," he said, "the quicker the time will go. Come along." The end of the trench where Barton was working with the power drill was now more than 100 yards from the main excavation. Davis was putting the final touches to the last prints to be uncovered. They were now very deep and widely spaced, and looking along them, one could see quite clearly where the great reptile had changed its course and started, first to run, and then to hop like an enormous kangaroo. Barton wondered what it must have felt like to see such a creature bearing down upon one with the speed of an express. Then he realized that if their guess was true, this was exactly what they might soon be seeing. By mid-afternoon, they had uncovered a record length of track. The ground had become softer, and Barton was roaring ahead so rapidly that he had almost forgotten his other preoccupations. He had left Davis yards behind, and both men were so busy that only the pangs of hunger reminded them when it was time to finish. Davis was the first to notice that it was later than they had expected, and he walked over to speak to his friend. "It's nearly 4:30, he said, when the noise of the drill had died away. "The chief's late. I'll be mad if he's had tea before collecting us." "Give him another 30 minutes, said Barton. "I can guess what's happened. They've blown a fuse or something, and it's upset their schedule." Davis refused to be placated. "I'll be darned annoyed if we've got to walk back to camp again. Anyway, I'm going up the hill to see if there's any sign of him." He left Barton blasting his way through the soft rock and climbed the low hill at the side of the old riverbed. From here, one could see far down the valley, and the twin stacks of the Henderson Barnes Laboratory were clearly visible against the drab landscape. There was no sign of the moving dust cloud that would be following the jeep. The professor had not yet started for home. Davis gave a snort of disgust. It was a 2-mile walk ahead of them, after a particularly tiring day, and to make matters worse, they'd now be late for tea. He decided not to wait any longer, and was already walking down the hill to rejoin Barton, when something caught his eye, and he stopped to look down the valley. Around the two stacks, which were all he could see of the laboratory, a curious haze, not unlike a heat tremor, was playing. They must be hot, he knew, but surely not that hot. He looked more carefully, and saw to his amazement that the haze covered a hemisphere that must be almost 1/4 mile across. And quite suddenly, it exploded. There was no light, no blinding flash, only a ripple that spread abruptly across the sky and then was gone. The haze had vanished, and so had the two great stacks of the powerhouse. Feeling as though his legs had turned suddenly to water, Davis slumped down upon the hilltop and stared open-mouthed along the valley. A sense of overwhelming disaster swept into his mind. As in a dream, he waited for the explosion to reach his ears. It was not impressive when it came, only a dull, long, drawn-out whoosh that died away swiftly in the still air. Half unconsciously, Davis noticed that the chatter of the drill had also stopped. The explosion must have been louder than he thought for Barton to have heard it, too. The silence was complete. Nothing moved anywhere as far as his eye could see in the whole of that empty, barren landscape. He waited until his strength returned, then, half running, he went unsteadily down the hill to rejoin his friend. Barton was half sitting in the trench, with his head buried in his hands. He looked up as Davis approached, and although his features were obscured by dust and sand, the other was shocked at the expression in his eyes. "So you heard it too," Davis said. "I think the whole lab's blown up. Come along, for heaven's sake."
Heard what?" said Barton dully.
Davis stared at him in amazement. Then he realized that Barton could not possibly have heard any sound while he was working with the drill. The sense of disaster deepened with a rush. He felt like a character in some Greek tragedy, helpless before an implacable doom. Barton rose to his feet. His face was working strangely, and Davis saw that he was on the verge of a breakdown, yet when he spoke, his words were surprisingly calm.
"What fools we were," he said. "How Henderson must have laughed at us when we told him that he was trying to see into the past."
Mechanically, Davis moved to the trench and stared at the rock that was seeing the light of day for the first time in 50 million years. Without much emotion now, he traced again the zigzag pattern he had first noticed a few hours before. It had sunk only a little way into the mud, as if when it was formed, the jeep had been traveling at its utmost speed. No doubt it had been, for in one place, the shallow tire marks had been completely obliterated by the monster's footprints. They were now very deep indeed, as if the great reptile was about to make the final leap upon its desperately fleeing prey.